Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're plunging into the stack of sources you've shared with us. We're trying to understand something really fundamental to how we interact, but, something we rarely think about consciously: chronemics.
Right, chronemics. That's the study of how we use time, how we structure it, and critically, how we assign meaning to it when we communicate. It's really all about the hidden messages that time sends.
Exactly. We tend to think of time as just, seconds and minutes ticking by on a clock. But this deep dive, I think, is going to show us how it's actually a really complex, non-verbal language all its own.
Yeah, we'll explore the different ways we even perceive time, which is fascinating in itself. And then there are the psychological roots, how it plays out in relationships and power dynamics.
And how culture just completely rewrites the rules of the clock, doesn't it?
Totally. So our mission today really is to uncover why timing isn't just like important. It's a core part of the actual message being sent.
And maybe, hopefully, along the way, you'll get some insight into what your own relationship with time might be communicating out there.
Let's hope so.
Okay, so let's unpack this. At its heart, what is chronemics really telling us about time?
Well, it's telling us that time is a surprisingly powerful nonverbal signal. I mean, think about it. In most advanced countries today, people are incredibly aware of time.
Oh, yeah. We're wearing watches, constantly checking our phones.
Right? Clocks are everywhere. We schedule our lives down to the minute sometimes.
So that simple fact that we're so focused on time that itself sends a message, right?
Precisely. The core idea, I think, from your sources is that time itself is a message. When we send and when we receive.
Like whether you're early or late or exactly on time.
Yeah, or how long you talk, how quickly you respond to an email or a text. It's all communication. It's all saying something.
Okay, so if time is a message, how do we even perceive it? Because it feels like it should be simple, but your sources, they mention researchers Knapp and Hall.
Knapp and Hall. They suggest we don't just see time in one single way. Our view actually changes based on how we're sort of measuring it or thinking about it at that moment.
Interesting. So what are some of these ways?
Well, one perception they talk about is viewing time as a location in time.
A location, like a place on a map.
Kind of, yeah. Not just this continuous flow, but distinct points. Think about when you say, oh, that was the perfect time to do something.
That was bad timing, like when someone walks in at the worst possible moment.
Exactly, or says the wrong thing. So in this sense, time gives order, it gives structure, it marks out places in our lives.
Like deadlines, or the downtime when a machine isn't working, or that really important quality time you set aside for someone.
Right. You're treating time like a specific location or a defined space in those instances. Then there's the duration of time.
Okay, that sounds a bit more straightforward, just how long something lasts.
It sounds simple, yeah, but it's about how we perceive it along a continuum, from moments that feel like they just vanish. Like, wow, time is flying.
Exactly. Or the opposite, when you're caught in a moment you wish would last forever. I want this to last forever. It's about that perceived length of the experience.
Got it. And they also mentioned intervals between events.
Yeah, basically seeing time is segmented. Like specific events happen and they create these breaks or distances between moments. They act as markers.
Okay. And the last one was patterns in time.
This is about perceiving time's rhythm, its pulse, maybe its cycles, recognizing when things repeat or happen in predictable ways at different times. The recurring beats.
So it's not just a river flowing. It's like locations on the riverbank, how long the journey feels, the rapids you hit, and the tides coming in and out. That's pretty layered.
It is. And it gets even more personal because time is also deeply psychological.
Right, psychological time. This is more about your inner clock, is that it?
Pretty much. It reflects how you personally perceive and use time. And a really big part of this, according to the sources, is your time orientation. Are you naturally focused more on the past, the present, or the future?
Okay, let's dig into those. This feels like it connects directly to how people behave. What's a past-focused person like?
Well, these individuals tend to see the past as stable. A reliable guide, really. They often look backward to understand what's happening today and to plan for tomorrow. History, tradition, these are often anchors for them.
Okay. And the present-focused type. We probably all know someone like this.
Yeah. These are often the live-in-the-moment folks. They're focused on the event itself, the immediate experience, not always thinking about the long-term process or, the consequences down the line.
Your sources describe them as do it now, see it now, experience it now.
Exactly. So maybe less likely to, say,
put money away for retirement or spend hours studying for some future exam. It's more about immediate gratification or sometimes just immediate survival needs.
Makes sense. And the future-focused person.
So for them, the present is often sort of a means to an end. What they're doing now is contributing to making life better later. They tend to be planners.
Looking ahead.
Right? Seeking new perspectives, figuring out better ways to do things, always with an eye on that horizon. And this orientation, the sources suggest, often links to longer-term benefits, economic, psychological, because they're investing and preparing.
It's really fascinating how much this inner sense of time can shape, well, everything, but this perception, it isn't always fixed, is it? The sources said it can get distorted.
Absolutely. Your perception of time isn't static. It can be skewed by things like your status, your emotional state.
Like how time flies when you're having fun.
Exactly. Or how it dries when you're bored or really stressed out. Your age can influence it. Stress levels definitely can. Stress can feel like it slows everything down to a crawl or sometimes makes huge chunks of time just disappear.
And where do these orientations even come from? Is it just like your personality?
It seems like it's more complex than that. The research points towards a mix. Culture plays a role. Socioeconomic class seems important. And just your personal life experiences.
The sources mentioned a possible link between, say, economic challenges or parents in unskilled labor and maybe more of a present focus.
Yeah, perhaps rooted in the need for sort of day-to-day survival, thinking about now. Conversely, maybe economic comfort or having more educated parents might correlate with a stronger future focus because there's perhaps more perceived opportunity or maybe necessity to plan for a career or long-term goals.
Wow, that's a really powerful idea. That our background could shape something as basic as how we relate to time.
It is quite profound when you think about it.
And the psychological relationship with time, it must spill directly into our interactions, right? The sources talk about time being personal and professional, affecting relationships, power.
Oh, it absolutely does. Your personal idea of time, like how important is punctuality to you? How long do you think it's okay to make someone wait? Do you hang around after a meeting or are you the first one out the door?
All those little things.
Yeah, they directly shape how other people see you professionally and socially. It sends signals.
And even online, right? Whether interactions are synchronous happening live or asynchronous, with those delays, that changes the whole feel.
Precisely. And this connects directly to something really concrete from the sources. Mm. Time as power. This is where it gets quite interesting.
Okay.
Think about yourself or people you know. Are you habitually early? Right on the dot. We're usually running a bit late for things, meetings, social stuff, work.
Mm-hmm.
Are you the first to arrive and the last to leave? Or do you tend to check in late and maybe slip out early?
Those habits definitely send messages about priorities, maybe respect, maybe even status.
They really do. Mm-hmm. And the source material highlights a classic dynamic here. Generally speaking, people with higher status often have the power or feel they have the power to make lower status people wait for them.
But it rarely works the other way around. A lower status person making a higher status person wait is often seen very negatively.
Exactly. So punctuality, or the lack of it, becomes this subtle or sometimes not so subtle marker of who holds the power in that situation.
It's also really interesting how some cultures, especially Western or North American ones, treat time like it's a thing. A resource you can own.
Yeah, like a valuable possession. We talk about wasting time, saving time, making time, spending time.
You wouldn't really say you waste space in the same way.
Right. So how we spend our time signals how much we value it or value the person we're spending it with.
And the sources connect that directly to relationships, don't they? Spending time together builds closeness.
Definitely. Dedicating time tends to increase feelings of immediacy, connection. And if that relationship then breaks down, there's often that added pain of feeling like all the time invested was, well, wasted or unappreciated.
That makes a lot of sense. Okay, so building on how we use time in relationships, the sources also get into how we distribute time within conversations and even the speed of our movements.
Yes, talk time or conversational time. That's another key aspect of chronemics. It's looking at things like who starts the conversation, who ends it. Who talks more?
Who gets to pick the topic, maybe?
Exactly. Who directs where the conversation goes? Essentially, who's controlling the flow of talk?
And I think we all have an intuitive sense that someone who just completely hogs the conversation, it doesn't feel great.
The sources are pretty clear on that. Someone who totally dominates the talk is often perceived as, well, rude, maybe narcissistic, certainly dominating.
Yeah. What about the other extreme? Someone who barely speaks.
You know, the materials were actually a bit less detailed on the specific perception of someone who rarely speaks, but the implication is clear. The balance of talk time sends a message about the relationship and the individuals. It's the imbalance that often stands out negatively.
Okay. So moving from talk time to speed and movement messages, this is about our overall pace.
Right. It looks at things like how quickly do you speak? Are you naturally a fast talker or more slow and deliberate? And it even extends to your general physical pace.
Really? Like how fast do you walk?
Yeah. Your sources mention this interesting distinction. Hypokinetic people, who tend to move and maybe talk a bit more slowly, often associated apparently with warmer climates or perhaps less developed areas. And then hyperkinetic people, who tend to move and talk more rapidly, maybe more common in cooler climates or more developed areas.
Huh. That's quite a generalization, but interesting nonetheless. So our physical tempo, our speaking rate, these are nonverbal signals too.
They are. And what's really fascinating is what the research says about how we perceive someone's response speed in a conversation.
Okay, what did it find?
Well, it kind of challenges a common assumption. Taking longer to respond doesn't automatically mean someone is slow or that they're trying to be deceptive.
Oh.
It can actually signal thoughtfulness, that they're taking a moment to process, to formulate a considered reply, rather than just blurting something out.
Right. And on the flip side, talking really fast.
Doesn't necessarily mean someone is super sharp or knowledgeable. It could just indicate impulsiveness, maybe spontaneity. It's not a guarantee of intellect.
That's a great takeaway. So a pause isn't necessarily a bad sign. It could be a good sign.
It could be. In fact, the research mentioned notes that a bit of hesitancy, those brief pauses, can actually be positively correlated with how believable someone seems, especially if their overall manner is positive and expressive. It can add a layer of perceived sincerity.
Interesting.
And another point the sources make is about adapting your speed. If you can subtly match your speaking rate to the person you're talking to, it might actually increase how attractive or persuasive they find you.
Like finding a shared rhythm.
Kinda, yeah. So being aware of your own natural speaking rate is pretty important because it definitely influences the first impressions people form.
Our rhythm, our pauses, our overall pace, it's all part of the complex message we're sending. And speaking of pace and rhythm, this has got to be heavily influenced by culture, right? Where we grow up.
Oh, absolutely. Time is profoundly cultural. Every culture has its own, often unspoken, rules about time, its own microtime norms, teaching its members how to use it, how to respond to it appropriately.
And your sources pointed out a big contrast, like between many Latin cultures, which might have a more fluid, less structured view of time, compared to, say, American or many Western European cultures, where, as we said, time is often treated like this valuable thing you can spend or waste.
Exactly. Those phrases like don't waste my time or I need to save time just don't carry the same weight or meaning everywhere. Cultures have fundamentally different ideas about punctuality, about what constitutes wasting time, about how schedules should work.
Which leads to that really key distinction the sources make between monochronic and polychronic cultures. Can you break that down?
Yeah, this is super important for anyone interacting across cultures. In monochronic cultures, time is generally seen as linear. Like a line you move along. People are often guided by schedules, that imaginary time clock.
One thing at a time.
Pretty much. The norm is to focus on one activity, finish it, then move to the next. Think about having set times for meals, separate from work time, separate from social time. Very segmented.
Okay. And polychronic.
In polychronic cultures, the approach is often more circular. Or maybe multilinear is a better way to put it. People are comfortable doing many things concurrently.
Juggling things.
Exactly. Relationships and completing the interaction you're currently in often take priority over sticking rigidly to a schedule. Someone might be having an important conversation, but also answer a phone call and maybe deal with a customer who walks in, all sort of overlapping.
Wow, yeah. That explains potential clashes right there, doesn't it? Scheduling meetings, expecting instant replies. It's just a different way of operating.
A completely different way.
Yeah.
The sources also briefly touch on the difference between informal and formal time.
Right. What's the gist there?
Well, informal time is more your flexible, subjective sense of it. How long things feel like they should take. Your personal comfort level with being early or late. Whether you lean more mono or polychronic yourself, regardless of the dominant culture.
Or personal time style.
Kind of. Whereas formal time is the external system we all learn. It's set, ordered, often cyclical. Think clock time, calendar dates, school bells ringing, appointment slots, official work hours. It's the public agreed upon structure.
Got it. So we have our internal subjective time and the external objective system. And beyond culture and psychology, time is also tied to our biology, isn't it? And the physical world.
That's right. The sources remind us that living things operate on rhythms. Biological time refers to our internal cycles, things like biorhythms, hormonal fluctuations, our natural sleep-wake cycles.
Like jet lag throwing you off.
Exactly. Disrupting that biological time throws off your natural rhythm and can have negative effects.
Yeah.
And the sources introduce the term chronotype here, that's your personal biological clock, basically determining if you're naturally a morning person, an evening person, or somewhere in between.
And physical time.
That's simpler, really. It's focused on the fixed cycles of the planet, the Earth spinning, giving us day and night, orbiting the sun, giving us seasons, the big external natural rhythms.
So putting it all together, time isn't just one simple thing at all. It's psychological, it's sociocultural, it's biological, and it's physical. It's incredibly layered.
It really is. And all these layers feed into why it's so fundamental in communication.
Which brings us right back to that core idea, the message value of time. At the end of the day, timing matters. Time is a signal.
And how we interpret that signal, how we decode the messages sent by someone else's use of time, depends heavily on how we perceive its arrival, its passing, especially its duration.
The sources even nod to modern communication speed here, right? Like the difference between getting an instant message reply versus waiting hours or days.
Exactly. Both send a message, whether intended or not. The speed carries meaning.
And one last practical concept the sources brought up was lead and contingency time.
Yeah, this prompts us to think about our own habits around planning, like how much lead time do you usually need or give yourself for tasks? How well do you cope when unexpected demands pop up?
And contingency time is like building in a buffer.
Right. The suggestion is maybe try adding some contingency time by aiming to finish things a bit early. It gives you breathing room for the unexpected, reduces stress.
Okay, so let's try to wrap this up. Let's unpack what this all means for you, the listener. We've seen that time is just so much more than numbers on a clock.
Yeah, it's this deeply ingrained, really complex, nonverbal signal. And it's shaped by everything from your personal psychology and your relationships to the culture you grew up in, even your own biology.
And understanding chronemics, this study of time, it really helps us start to decode those hidden messages, doesn't it? In how we use time, how others use time.
Things like showing up late or early, who controls the conversation's timing, navigating those different cultural paces, the polychronic versus monochronic styles.
It affects everything, how respected you feel, how successful you are in cross-cultural situations.
Definitely. So considering that time itself can function as power, and that your fundamental orientation to time, whether you lean towards the past, present, or future, is influenced by so many factors.
Factors like your background, your current stress levels.
It really raises an important question, I think. One that goes beyond just being on time.
So here's something to think about. How does being aware of your own personal biological clock, your chronotype, or maybe understanding the deep-seated cultural view of time that you inherited, how does that awareness change the way you think about your communication today? And maybe how you interpret the timing messages you get from others?